This is Corinne Winmore, and I'm at the Byron Bay Writers Festival, and I'm talking to Glenn Carl. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Now, I think you probably have one of the most unique backstories here at the entire festival, because you used to work for the CIA, didn't you?
I did. I was a career CIA officer for over 23 years and retired a couple of years ago.
Tell us a little bit about that and how that led to you actually being at a writers' festival.
Well, actually, I have always wanted to write. Although that wasn't my plan in my career as a CIA officer, I started in the CIA as an operations officer right out of graduate school. An operations officer is we're the ones who we all see in the movies. We live overseas, and our job is to get people to commit treason against their countries and work for ours.
Were you recruited from that right from graduate school, or did you have your eye on it when you were actually at university?
Oh, I pursued it pretty hard, actually, which is a long story. It should be in one of my next books. It's too long a tale, I'm sure, for any interview format, but I pursued it pretty hard.
So you posted overseas and you persuade people to give you secrets?
That's it, yes. As George Tenet, who was director of the CIA when, for a good part of the time when I was an officer, said, he put it pithily, he said, the CIA's mission is to recruit spies and steal secrets. And so we either have human beings, which is what I worked on almost always, although not always, provide us secrets, or you can use technical means, which is you could bug a telephone or put a microphone on somebody's shoe or things like that.
So tell us, is it as high-tech and as extraordinary as it's made out in all the spy movies, or do you have even better stuff at the CIA?
It can be. Day-to-day, my job consists of talking to a lot of people. But there are shocking technological gizmos that are used. Shocking sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, so James Bond hasn't got a patch on the CIA?
No, not at all. No, the British are talented, but they have fewer resources than the CIA, actually, because they're small.
I detect a little bit of international rivalry here.
They did teach us literally everything that we know. We were created in World War II. The predecessor of the CIA was the OSS, the Office of the Special Services. Slightly pejorative nickname for OSS was Oh So Social, because it was staffed heavily by Ivy League graduates. Yeah, truly, because it was cosmopolitan elite and all that sort of thing. The British taught us our methods, our structure, everything. In the 60 years since then, we've evolved our own practices, but we're very close and friendly rivals. Everyone's a rival. Everybody.
You're no longer with the CIA, and in fact, as you say, you're now sort of a writer. Tell us about your book and what you're talking about here at the festival.
Well, my book is titled The Interrogator, and that is what I did in one operation, clearly the most important one in my career, and I believe among the most important in the history of the CIA. And that's why I wrote the book, because it was very disturbing that American officers, myself included, were involved in what was called the Enhanced Interrogation Program, which is a euphemism for torture. All Americans would imagine, well, if you ask them prior to 9/11, should Americans torture, they would say, well, of course not, we're the good guys, we oppose that sort of stuff. That's why we have a CIA, to stop that. And then I found that, in fact, we were involved in it, and we had very quickly sold our souls and made a bargain with the devil after 9/11. And I thought that it was my obligation, actually, as a citizen, to say, this is not us and we mustn't do it.
Now, it's interesting that you say that everything changed after 9/11. Of course, it was a cataclysmic event in American and in world history. But there'd been other terrible wars, too, that the Americans had experienced. And they formulated their ethical approach to being anti-torture from that as experiences. So what was it about that particular experience that suddenly all the principles were just thrown out the window?
Well, I wish that Americans had been as pure as your framing the question would implies prior to 9/11, but we haven't been. I'm not an America basher or CIA basher at all, but in a time of war, the one's principles and practices are tested terribly. In Vietnam, we did things we probably shouldn't have, some, while fundamentally attempting to uphold the spirit as well as the letter of our laws and practices. And that happened in 9/11 too. So I don't think that it necessarily is a unique aberration, but rather an unfortunately not surprising excess due to the pressures of a perceived national crisis. The reaction was partly in panic and not rational, and clearly transgressed and undermined lastingly. That's the most disturbing thing. Undermined and altered American principles and beliefs. That's the most disturbing part of my story. Telling a story of kidnapping and interrogation and torture is dramatic and important, but it is actually secondary. The most important, disturbing fact of my story is what we have done to ourselves. And I usually give this at the end of my normal talks when I go around speaking. One statistic that illustrates what I'm getting at. Prior to 9/11, it was inconceivable to talk about American officials torturing without it being considered appalling. Now, if you polls by responsible polling authorities have been done since 9/11, and you ask Americans age 50 and over, should American officials, like the CIA officers, torture to protect American interests? A strong majority of that age group says, absolutely not. That's un-American. That's why the CIA exists, to stop that sort of thing. No. If you ask Americans the same question who are 50 and below, the question, it's not 50, it's 35, I'm sorry, 35 and above and 35 and below. You ask Americans 35 and below the question, and a majority of them answer, well, it's okay. Guys like Carl, they have to do what they have to do. And that is shocking, because that means our culture has fundamentally shifted. And you can also see this change in the fact that one of the two major political parties in the United States, the Republicans, who put up Mitt Romney for president, had as one of their campaign planks what they would do if and when elected was to reinstitute torture. And this was broadly accepted in the American public, that one of the two major parties can advocate as a central national policy torture. I find that appalling. And that's why I wrote the book.
What it points to the fact is that the whole attack on the American people has actually had this deeper psychological implication, that more than the loss of life that was actually immediate there, this is a lasting change. It was a deep psychological attack on the society, wasn't it?
It was, but it wasn't the act was horrifying and terrible and needed to be responded to and punished. The people who did it need to be stopped. There are people trying to kill you and me, and whose values would make life unlivable by our lights. There are enemies, and there is a real mission for the CIA and the United States National Security Authorities. Absolutely. That's not the problem. The problem is twofold. It was the reflexive, unthinking, visceral and emotional response of the Bush administration, frankly, that didn't understand the nature of the problem. And that then, as our leaders, whom we trust to protect us, that is their mission. They know more than the average citizen in Peoria, Illinois, or in Byron Bay, Australia, what threats are and what one needs to do. That's why we delegate to them that responsibility. They spent 8 years saying that behind every bush there was a bearded terrorist, and we had to go and get them. And then echoing and amplifying that was the national media and programs like 24, which was so popular and historically destructive of American culture. I refused to watch that show because every program, Jack Bauer, the equivalent of me, of the CIA officer, went out and broke the law and beat the daylights out of people to protect the American public, and it was okay. And that's why people 35 and below, what has formed their worldview are their national leaders for half their entire lives saying, we are a danger, the bad guys are like this and we will stop them, echoed by the general culture that takes these things as assumptions, such as motherhood is good, terrorists are Islamic and bad, and they're everywhere. That's the change. It's changeable again, but that's why American society has evolved in a frightening way.
Has there been any repercussions from old friends in the CIA or from the other areas of the American right since your book's been published?
The people who have approached me have been more than overwhelmingly, almost without exception, supportive of what I've done. A number of my colleagues, some whom I knew and others I didn't, have approached me and said, please write this book. Someone has to speak out and tell the truth. Please do this. One or two have said, you are aiding and abetting the enemy. The nefarious part, not surprising, however, has been a quite conscious series of actions by the neoconservatives to discredit me and suppress publication of the book or any publicity about it, because if there's no publicity and I don't speak in any public forum, then I don't exist. That's happened, and they've been successful in painting me as a malcontent and failure and so on, sure.
Thank you for talking to us today, Glenn, and thank you for having the moral courage to publish The Interrogator.
I appreciate it. Anytime.